Hello, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to Vegan Activist Radio right here on UMFM 101.5 FM. My name is Cheryl Sobey, and I'm the host and producer of Vegan Activist Radio. And I'm very excited to be here today. I've been producing my show, Vegan Activist Radio, since 2015 when I started at CKDU in Halifax. And I'm from Winnipeg, but I moved back here a couple of years ago and started volunteering at UMFM. And I've just been kind of producing podcasts of my radio show this summer. But this is actually my first live show with Vegan Activist Radio in 2.5 years. So, wow, it's great. Great to be back live on air. And I'm especially happy to be here on UMFM 101.5 FM. It's been, such a great opportunity for me to join the station, and I just love it. So, and I'm so grateful for their support. But moving on, so I'm very happy to introduce a guest that I have here today. We've got a great episode planned. So I'm joined by a very special guest, longtime animal rights activist, punk rock musician, and vegan, Debbie Wall. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you for having me. A live vegan activist.
Exactly. On Vegan Activist Radio. It's awesome.
I hear a theme coming on.
It's awesome. Oh, well, welcome, Debbie. Thanks. Thanks so much for being here. Maybe to start, maybe do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Where to start? I worked in veterinary clinics for 35 years as an animal veterinary assistant. I'm currently working in the pet insurance industry, so they want to use me for my mind, if you can believe that. You kind of gave a bit of an overview with your introduction. I've got pioneer cred in both the punk rock scene in Winnipeg and the animal rights movement as well.
Awesome. All right. So now, first kind of serious question, but not too serious, is what I like to ask my guests is about veganism. And so I like to hear people's stories about why they became vegan. So Debbie, can you, tell us why you went vegan and how long have you been vegan for?
It's a little bit of a progression. I actually stopped drinking milk a long time ago, and it was mostly due to taste. There used to be a dairy farm within the city limits where we'd get milk from, like whole milk, and then that dairy shut down, and then we went back to getting whole milk from the store. And whole milk, the difference between the two is like the difference between whole milk and skim, and it was just like the taste. So I quit drinking milk back then. I also had an eating disorder, and I was really cutting back on meat because of the caloric density of it. But my actual aha moment was when I was actually a student at this very university. I was in the Faculty of Agriculture on my way to becoming a veterinarian, and it was the annual Aggie Bash at Glenlee Research Station. And there I met a little calf, and the calf licked my face, and I went, this little calf is just like a little dog, ding, 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 and stopped eating meat permanently at that point. And still was not a vegan, but I kind of would describe myself as a veganarian, so more vegan than vegetarian.
Yeah.
And that was like 40 years ago, and became vegan more recently. And it was such a kind of a gradual thing. I can't even put a time on it or a date on it. But back then, I think that's the way a lot of people went because there just wasn't the information about dairy and eggs that there is now. Mm-hmm. I think these days people like don't go halfway there either. They seem to just go right into veganism.
Yeah, exactly. Or we wish that people would.
Yeah, well, a lot of people don't realize there's probably more suffering in a glass of milk than there is in a steak, you know. But
exactly.
it's just another part of that cognitive dissonance that they don't realize.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a really cool story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Do you want to talk about, you touched on an interesting word, cognitive dissonance, and I know I've talked about that on my show before, but do you want to maybe talk a little bit about that and how it is that that prevents people from, fully accepting what we're talking about? Because animals being abused is not like an opinion. It's a fact.
It is, but it's by design hidden from us. A lot of people don't realize what goes on. And some people are very good at compartmentalizing. I mean, I was. Mm-hmm. I had actually gone to a slaughterhouse before I even thought about being a vegetarian. I had a friend whose dad worked in one. And even there, I was just like, oh, well, that's just what happens to cows. You know, so I was able to make that demarcation that there are certain animals are treated one way and certain animals are treated another. But one of the things that I learned with that little calf incident is that probably the best way to get to people is to touch their hearts. You know, because we have all kinds of ways to justify things in our heads, which is also leads to cognitive dissonance. Like mm-hmm. you're just saying, oh, well, that needs to happen. Quotes underneath around the word needs, or it's the necessary thing to happen. And the fact is there's so much suffering on this planet. It's unprecedented. It's never been to this extent before. And so much of it is unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And it's... But people can justify it. It's like you go, how can this be? You know, once you've had the light bulb go on, you see what's happening, and you just can't understand why. Why is this allowed to happen?
Exactly. And I know I talk about this a lot, and if you know me, you know I talk about this, but this idea of like this humane meat, or that there's an ethical way to, consume animal products. And the answer is no, and there never will be.
Not unless it's clean meat. Clean meat's coming along.
So do you want to maybe describe what clean meat is for folks who don't know?
Okay, well, people are probably already familiar with plant-based meat. So you have the Beyond Burger and the Impossible Burger, but they are made out of plant proteins. What clean meat is actually cell-grown meat. And what they are envisioning is that people will actually be able to have bioreactors, almost like brewing your own beer. But you only need one cell to produce all kinds of meat. So there's no slaughter. They mm-hmm. use the term clean as a nod to clean energy. Yeah. So the meat's being produced in a way that is clean in every sense of the word, really, because it's using a lot less resources. Mm-hmm. There's no fecal matter. There's no blood. There's no urine. There's nothing like that that's involved in the process because it's slaughter-free. That's another term that's been used. There are a lot of people that are kind of poo-pooing the idea, saying it's not natural. But when you think of the way animals are raised for food, it's anything but natural. You know, they're bred to be either grow, you know, exceptionally large, exceptionally fast, mm-hmm. or produce more secretions in the, you know,
dairy cows.
And
people
eggs.
Don't realize how milk is produced, right?
Yeah. And to the extent that it depletes their bodies, there's mm-hmm. nothing natural about it at all. And actually, I believe it was Winston Churchill that made some sort of a quote that, like even back then, that one day we will see it's ridiculous to grow a whole chicken just to have a chicken breast. So in a way, he kind of mm-hmm. he kind of foresaw it. And then I heard an interesting concept saying that Jesus was the first person to produce clean meat because he took one fish and made a whole bunch of fish.
That's great.
So there you go.
I mean, I guess, I can see the benefits of that. I guess for some people who are vegan, like I still wouldn't eat it because it is a cell from an animal. But in a lot of ways, it can solve some of, like I know we've talked about, or I know you've talked about it, is like cat and dog food.
Oh, I cannot wait for it to
market. I mean, I know everyone has different perspectives on how they feel about cats being vegan. Dogs can be vegan. You know, some people have very healthy vegan cats. Others who've tried to make their cats vegan have had health problems. So I think it's, if we could provide an option like that for our animal companions, then that could be something really positive.
But we will lay the whole idea of vegan, you know, the argument about vegan cats to rest. And you can't,
exactly.
You know, think of
it. I don't even want to get into that because it's just, you know.
But I will say, you know, like if you just want to look at it from just a strictly biological perspective, cats are obligate carnivores
now. Exactly.
And we are, as much as people want to deny it, we are herbivores. So look at all the health problems that we get from eating meat. So you got to think, well, then what kind of health problems are cats going to get from not, you know, mm-hmm. and that's just that's a biological fact. You know, it's just like if there's some people on a carnivore diet, could you imagine if somebody on a carnivore diet says, well, I want to feed my rabbit meat. Just like, and you go, well, that's ridiculous. So,
yeah, exactly.
But I get the dilemma. I certainly get the dilemma because I have to think about that all the time when I feed my cats.
Yeah. I mean, I have a cat. So It's something I think about all the time, too.
Come on, clean meat.
Yeah.
We're waiting for you.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, now maybe let's talk about activism. So you're a longtime animal rights activist. So what is it that made you, want to get involved in animal rights activism?
You know, it probably was, because it was so long ago, was a poster. I first became involved with a group called Students Organized for Animal Liberation. It was at Nelson McIntyre School. And it was Danishka, I think her name was pronounced Ekstrom. She had this very interesting spelling for her last name, but now it's Danishka Esterhazy, who's a filmmaker. I'm just hoping she makes some animal rights film one day. That would be great.
Yeah,
so it started off there, and it morphed into speaking out for animal liberation. So that way we kind of kept the acronym of SOUL, but made it more inclusive for people other than students. But then we started, one of our first actions was protesting the Shrine Circus, which we now know is no longer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it's due to those efforts, though, right? Like, of long-time activism against things like that, so.
And you know, the whole premise was to get the word out. I mean, hence speaking out, right? So you figure, like, if only people know about this, then things will change. But I don't know. It gets pretty disappointing. And maybe that's going back to the cognitive dissonance thing that people do know, but they don't change sometimes. And it's... Mm-hmm. It's like, wow.
I know. I think it's one of the biggest challenges that I feel as an activist when people know. They're like, oh, I support you. I understand why you're doing what you do. But then they don't want to make a change. Even if you don't want to be an activist, I know we talked about before the show, for some folks, activism isn't for everyone. So maybe... Yeah, transition to veganism or a plant-based diet.
That's where we want the world to go. So, I mean, if you can at least do that, you know, but it's disappointing when you know people who claim to be animal lovers, but you have to watch them eat hamburgers or wear fur. I know somebody who was just a huge rabbit lover. They had pictures of rabbits all over, and they had pet rabbits, and she wore boots with rabbit fur on it. like, really?
I know, but it's like I think we were talking about it at VegFest with people this weekend, is like the Canada Goose jacket. So it's a perfect example of, you see people walking their dogs, and they're wearing a jacket with the trim of a dog. I mean, a coyote is just, it's like a wild dog.
Oh, yeah.
So I know you're big into the anti-fur activism.
Well, you know, there used to be a lot of freestanding fur stores in Winnipeg, and they're gone. And fur had almost disappeared until, and I call them Canada Goofs.
Yeah,
Canada,
I like
Goofs
that.
Came along, and now it's making a comeback.
And they charge so much money for it, and it's all off from animal torture. Like, yeah, literally, people are paying thousands of dollars to wear a jacket that is... screams to us as activists torture.
Yeah, and the animals had screamed,
right?
And my dog actually, she's pretty wolfy looking, and I have a lot of people, she's a pretty girl, so people like to make comments about her, and you know, they say, oh, what a beautiful dog, and I just, well, so was the being that died for your fur trim. So she ends up being a little bit of a bait for me to draw people in, just like, but maybe make the connection.
But it's making the connection. And like that you said earlier, I really liked what you said about the heart connection. Like, you have to, for a lot of people, it's the emotional component that's going to help them. Not in all cases, though, but in a lot of cases, it's people can connect with, like, their dogs. Or that's why, like, animal sanctuaries, I think, are critical for everyone to go, even if you're not vegan, because then you can actually see the individuals.
Well, that's what changed it for me, was meeting a calf. You know, then you start realizing that they are individuals, and then you see them just enjoying their lives, and why would you want to take that from them?
I know, because, like, when I go to Kismet Creek, so Kismet Creek is it's the first animal sanctuary in Winnipeg, Manitoba, not the only one. But when I go there, it's just like, my heart is so full, and I see these animals, and I just am like, how can people eat lambs and goats and turkeys and pigs and cows? They're just such gentle, amazing, beautiful creatures.
And you know what, when you're talking about lamb, like a lot of the way we label food to further this cognitive dissonance is we don't call it the flesh of a cow, it's beef.
Exactly.
It's not the flesh of a pig, it's pork, but they still call lamb, lamb.
And that's a baby.
That's a baby.
A lamb is a baby sheep. Yeah. So, yeah, or veal, right? And we say veal, but people don't realize that that's, you're eating a baby cow.
Actually, I know some people that say, I'll never eat veal because it is, but then just, well, you got to think the milk that you're drinking should have been that baby cow's.
Yeah, I think for one, I think a lot of people don't really realize the milk industry. I know a lot of people don't understand. Like, I've talked to so many people about this, about how, like, cows have to be pregnant and give birth to a baby in order to produce milk. It doesn't happen any other way. They're a lactating mammal, just like humans. Like, if I don't have a baby, I'm not going to lactate.
Right. And then their babies are stolen from them. But, you know, I am guilty as charged, like, for the longest time being a vegetarian. You know what? Just didn't even think of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just didn't really think of it. The odd time
it's not talked about. I didn't know I was a vegetarian when I was in high school. I didn't know either.
Yeah.
You know, I ate cheese that was like my, instead of eating meat, I just ate dairy products.
See, I didn't do a lot of that. I kind of got into, you know, like the tofurkey when it came along. But, you know, back when I stopped eating meat, the only way you could get tofu was to either go to a health food store or go to Chinatown where they had them in big chunks in a vat, like a full of brine, which I wish they had today. There's so much plastic. Like, I love the fact there's all this great vegan stuff coming out, but the packaging just drives me nuts. And if people actually ate a whole food plant-based diet, which is the best for them, you know, food in its most natural form, you know, it's also better for the planet because you don't need a lot of packaging. And it's less expensive. You know, there's this idea that veganism is so expensive, but it's not. Like, especially when you eat just good, healthy, basic food. It's super cheap, like rice, beans.
You can buy bulk beans anywhere, right? Like, now Bulk Barn, you can go and take your jars.
Oh, wow. Great.
So you can reduce a lot of your plastic consumption that way.
I've been doing that for ages at Vita Health. They have this peanut butter grinding machine, and I've been using the same jars there for decades.
Yeah. So there, I mean, it is, yeah, you're right. It is the, do you want to talk maybe a little bit more about that? Just like, what is whole food plant-based mean for folks who maybe don't know what that is about?
I guess there's some confusion between the word vegan and, I mean, vegan is more of a philosophy. It's all encompassing. Like, when you are a vegan, you try to live as harm-free as possible, and that means not using any kind of animal products in your food, makeup, cleaning materials. You don't go to things like the rodeo, and you certainly don't eat them or their secretions. But you can be a vegan and eat really bad food. Like, you can eat Oreos and wash them down with Pepsi and stuff like that, and you'd still be a vegan, but it's definitely not healthy. So whole food plant-based means what we were talking about earlier, just eating food in its most unrefined natural form, and has been proven to not only improve health, but in some cases you can reverse diseases. And there are plant-based doctors that are having all kinds of great results with reversing type 2 diabetes, heart disease, you know, preventing things like stroke, you know, obesity rates. Like, the nice thing about eating whole food plant-based, you know, it takes a while to transition, but once you're there and you've really cleaned out your body, you just do what your body tells you. Your body knows what it needs, and you can eat tons. You can eat all day,
yeah,
and feel great, and you're just loading yourself up with all these phytonutrients and vitamins and minerals, and it's just I've really started to get into sprouting lately, and just I've recognized the power of seeds for a long time. You think from this little tiny particle, almost like a huge, like, tree can grow. Like, think of the power in that versus a slab of dead flesh.
Right.
What do you want your body to be made out of, you know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I had Michelle Tree on my show last month, or in August, and she talked a lot about, yeah, there's a plant-based living Winnipeg group, and they do a lot of health stuff. And we just talked actually before the show started about this movie that just came out called The Game Changers. And I've been telling everyone I know about it because it's phenomenal, and it goes into the health aspects. of why people are eating plant-based, but then it also shows the proof of what a plant-based diet and a whole food plant-based diet, especially what it can do for people's bodies. And there's these world famous athletes who are breaking records. There's Olympic athletes, like they are just unprecedented in terms of their power in their body, just fueled by plants.
And I have not yet seen the movie and looking forward to it, but my understanding from the trailer, it's really, targeting male audiences, because a lot of the promotion for meat, you have to eat a lot of meat to be a man, right? And so it's dispelling a lot of those myths. And when you have a lot of cholesterol on board, that starts clogging your arteries. Well, your arteries feed all parts of your bodies, even your reproductive organs. So my understanding was that a lot of the film crew went vegan after seeing that part.
There's definitely a part of that, that documentary. Actually, a couple parts, but one specific part about male reproductive health.
A specific part about a specific part, yeah.
And just, they did the scientific test, right? Like blood tests. They did, a study. So the proof is there.
They showed two test tubes of blood. One was taken after an athlete had eaten a plant-based meal, mm-hmm. and one after a meat-based meal. And you could just see like the fat visually in the blood.
And then they did a test about male anatomy as another part of that movie. And I think
the plant-based athletes performed better.
They were blown away. It was like hundreds of percentage kind of difference between eating a plant-based meal versus an animal-based meal. So
once again, guys, if you need to think about your little head, this is going to win you over. Yeah.
So everyone should go see The Game Changers.
And take your boyfriend. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But we need all kinds of things to appeal to people. And that's kind of maybe something we can talk a little bit about, because there's so many different forms of activism.
Oh, yeah. And it's incredible. Back in the day, it was mostly, trying to get the word out before the internet. One of the things we did was put out a magazine called Speaking Out for Animal Liberation. I actually had a TV show on, it was VPW 11 Community Access. So any of the old punks out there, that would have been the same station that had Dan Pichette's Alternative Rock Stand, just for your reference. Pollock and Pollock was another show on that, but I digress. But just the way I had gotten these films, there used to be a magazine called The Animal's Agenda that I would get a lot of information from, and there was a group called Animal Rights Information Service in the States that had put out this series of shows, and the program was called Animal Rights Forum. So I got the tapes up here, and Winnipeg was the first city to air them on TV. So back in the day, if you saw any of the footage, like I did write some of my own shows, but a lot of it was these tapes that had all kinds of footage that was never seen on TV before.
That's so cool. That's so awesome, Debbie.
Yeah. But things are now, it's like, it's, there's so many groups. There's like doctors and lawyers and athletes, and it's just everywhere. We are a movement now. It's not just a few, here's more air quotes, crazies with, placards. It's people
and loving hippies,
yeah, all those stereotypes. But it's something that I'm really glad that we're like getting in with the climate change, because it's all related. And last week I went to the peace march, and I had my little sign that says peace begins in the kitchen, go veg. I think it's really good that we can get on board all these other movements and show that the animals aren't here for us. They're here with us. Mm-hmm. And to make that connection, when you're already with a bunch of people fighting for the climate, they are ripe for that information to make the connection, right? Because they're already caring about, and we're talking about this because animal agriculture causes more greenhouse gases than all forms of transportation combined. It's, environmental degradation, like the species are being lost because we're killing off animals so we can kill animals so we can eat them, kill ourselves.
It really makes no sense.
But then kill animals trying to find cures for the diseases we're causing. It just never ends, right?
It seems so ridiculous when you put it like that, but it's the truth.
And then we're killing the planet alongside it. So it's the best thing you can do for yourself, the planet, and the animals is to go vegan.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I really like that you brought that up about the climate and environment and that intersection, because for so many years it was like you're either an animal rights activist or you're an environmental activist. And it, I had yet to meet very many environmental activists who were vegan. And there was the movie or documentary Cowspiracy that came out quite a few number of years ago now that kind of highlighted the hypocrisy of the fact that in all these climate movements and environmental movements, no one wants to talk about animal agriculture. Yet it's one of the number one causes of all those problems, you know, that you mentioned, like land degradation, deforestation, pollution. And now it finally seems like these movements are merging with, you know, like there's the Extinction Rebellion and Animal Rebellion, and the SAVE movement that, you know, we're a part of is now split into Animal SAVE and Health SAVE and Climate SAVE. So we're really seeing, like, and the youth climate strikes and, you know, Greta Thunberg and all this stuff.
She's so great. And she's vegan.
And it gives me, you know, that's what gives me hope is like, yeah, the move. And I know Jessica Reed Scott just wrote a really important article about that.
Yeah. She's amazing. She's a warrior princess for the animals.
Yeah.
Wielding her mighty, mighty pen.
Local to
Winnipeg.
As a
sword for the animals.
Yeah, she's a writer, and she wrote a really good article just about, yeah, how the movements are merging and why it's so necessary.
And you know what's really good is she's getting the word out via more mainstream media, because when we first started back in 87 for about, I guess the first 5 years, we actually got quite a bit of media attention. Like we were on CJOB, The Action Line with Peter Warren, for anybody who remembers old Peter. Yeah, we were on his show at least a couple of times. We'd have TV press out to, you know, protests and whatnot. And then there was just this, all of a sudden, this dead zone, you know, the where related stories sort of disappeared into this black hole. But I think now the media, well, they either have to become relevant and actually cover these kinds of stories, or, you know, I was going to say egg on their face, but that's not vegan.
Vegan egg on their
that's
face.
That's right. Just egg.
But I would say that in the past 2 years or 2.5 years since we've been organizing actions with Manitoba Animal Save, more and more frequently the media is now coming out and reporting on animal rights stories.
That's good to see.
And then finally this summer, I was literally blown away. A CBC article came out and it just interviewed myself and Dana, another organizer with Manitoba Animal Save. No other, you know, they didn't ask anyone else. They didn't ask the farmer's perspective. They just interviewed us about our action. And they let us talk about animals as individuals. And they reported on that. And to see that kind of change in mainstream media, and then, you know, Jessica Reed Scott, all these articles, and you're, you know, Debbie's also a writer. we forgot to mention that Debbie is also a writer, and seeing, you know, your stuff get published too, it's huge.
Yeah, you know, I kind of gave up a little bit on the it was the Free Press that I would send in a lot of letters to the editor, and I've had dozens, I don't know how many over the years printed, but then they went through this period of time where, I mean, not all my letters, because you don't get all your letters printed, but yeah. I would say probably the majority of them did. And then it went through a period where they all seemed like they weren't bothering at all. So I kind of just gave up, and now I've discovered social media and the internet, and I'm going crazy over there.
I know. It's a blessing and a curse.
It is. I was just telling my friend I went for lunch with at Ver Juice Bar, where there's lots of yummy vegan treats there. I both love and loathe the internet.
Yeah, I feel the same. I mean, I know I'm, you know, younger than you, but we didn't necessarily... Like, I was like an early teenager when we got the internet, and, you know, social media wasn't a thing until I was in my 20s. So it was like, you know, it was quite interesting growing up before all this stuff. And now I'm addicted to my phone and social media. So, but I like to remember the fact that I was not always that way.
You can, as long as you use it for good and not evil.
Yeah, exactly.
A little naughtiness every now and then is okay, but never evil.
Yeah, that's one thing I've learned is that never read the comments in an article that you were being interviewed on. Don't engage with trolls.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Who's got the time?
We just don't have the time. And I know some people, we call them keyboard warriors, and they like to talk a big game and harass you. Or there's this one guy who's harassing us, like, since we did that vigil in Steinbach for the dairy cows. And every form of our social media. He was trying to harass us and send us photos. And actually, there's a bunch of truckers and they troll our YouTube channel. So we get a new comment about every day from them.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, well, you're watching our videos. So,
well there you go. Well, I guess we sort of back in the day, we had the Manitoba Trappers Association send some sort of letters to everybody who advertised in the magazine.
Wow.
To try to, and most of them just like laughed it all off. Just, I guess their anxieties were rising even back then.
Right. Can we just go back to the magazine for a moment?
Sure.
We didn't talk too much about that. So was that a self-published magazine?
It was.
Magazine?
Todd Lawton was responsible for a lot of the content. He drew the lovely pictures that adorned the front of
each
issue.
Awesome. I'll post them on my Facebook page after I took a photo of it. Yeah.
And then everybody got to contribute. They had like action alerts in there. So you could, write back then. You still had to write letters. One neat punk rock kind of trick I did learn way back in the day was you could soap your stamps. So if you had a stamp, you just rub some soap over it. And then when it got canceled, you could just scrape the ink off and then reuse the stamp again. So
nice. I like that. Punk rock tips from Debbie.
There you go.
About activism. Awesome. Well, how about, we were having such a great conversation, but let's take a bit of a break and play a song, a music break. So Debbie picked a couple songs. So the first song we're going to play is Propagandy. So do you want to tell us why you picked that song?
Local punk rock vegan heroes, Propagandy. This song is written about a pig named Francis who had escaped from a slaughter facility and was living freely, I guess, in the bush somewhere until they used a tranquilizer dart to, I guess they had the best of intentions, was perhaps to save his life and put him in a sanctuary, but unfortunately the dart had punctured his abdomen and he died of an infection. So poor Francis had at least something that most farmed animals never have, was the taste of freedom, a little bit mm-hmm. of fresh air and some sunshine.
Yeah.
And it's those kinds of stories that sometimes really touch people's hearts, because the whole system is so industrialized. Sometimes after watching footage, you just get numbed to it too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's little stories like that that make you realize these animals are all individuals.
Yeah. Well, thank you for picking it. The song is Potemkin City Limits by Propagandy, and it's from their 2009 album Supporting Cast. So, yeah, it's a great choice. So
enjoy.
We'll be back in a few minutes.
Let's pogo.
All right.
Some relief from the dissonance. Bring your questions to the Answers Information Booth on the first floor of University Center. Answers sells post-secondary and other bus passes and is the place to get tickets from Ticketmaster or for campus social events. Not to mention campus maps, exam schedules, free phones, and campus information. Answers Info Booth is open Monday to Thursday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Vegan Activist Radio on UM FM 101.5 FM. My name is Cheryl, and I'm the host of Vegan Activist Radio. And if you're just tuning in now, I'm here with special guest, animal rights activist, punk rock musician, Debbie Wall.
Hi.
Welcome back, Debbie.
Thank you.
Second introduction. All right. So, yeah, if you've been listening, you know we've been talking about veganism, animal rights activism, you know, animal rights as a social movement. And if you're just tuning in, then, you know, jump in now and we'll keep going with our conversation. And so I know on the break we talked about, Debbie brought in like her magazine that she contributed to and some buttons. So there was one button that you want to talk about. So do you want to talk about that now?
Yeah, sure. The button says bullfighting is out. So the bull is out are all in big letters, and fighting is a smaller letter. This button is about a half a century old, and I get to say that. They were actually going to bring bullfighting to Winnipeg, and there were no animal rights groups back there. I guess there was the Humane Society, but I heard about it because I had walked into a Max store, and they had a petition there, and as I recall, but, you know, maybe I don't recall, but there was a petition, and I believe the clerk said I was too young to sign the petition, but he said I could have the button, so I wore the button. But they never did bring bullfighting to Winnipeg, so that might be one of our first early wins that
wow
has been lost to time, except for this button that remains as proof.
Aw, I like that story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh,
yeah. I've always been an activist.
my first recollection was when I was just a little wee kid out at the lake in the Whiteshell, and walking along a road, and there was a sign that said hunting allowed. So I got some sort of a marker, and I wrote N-O. So it said, like, no hunting allowed. I went, that'll fool them.
Yeah. Nice. I like that. Yeah, I know. That's awesome. Yeah, thank goodness they did not bring bullfighting to Winnipeg. It's bad enough we have rodeos in Manitoba.
Hopefully we will no longer have the professional bull riders coming back, though. Mm. I had been in contact with the city because there's actually a portion of our responsible pet ownership bylaw that states that commercial animals are not allowed in the city. And I kind of use that as a leverage to say, why are we allowing, because cattle are considered commercial animals. Mm-hmm. And I kind of used that as a leverage and was contacting the city. And my understanding is that we might not be having them anymore because they pointed that out to the, I guess I'm assuming Kevin Donnelly at True mm-hmm. North. So we'll see.
Wow.
That would
be a huge win for animals for Winnipeg. Good. That's amazing activism.
I had a little win with the betta fish.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Like, notoriously, and it doesn't seem to be just limited to pet value, but all over the place, people sell like betta fish, also known as Siamese fighting fish, and they're kept in these like just pathetically small little cups where they can't even, it's like a sow stall for fish,
it's
essentially.
Horrible. Yeah.
They're either like kind of floating in suspended animation, or they kind of give up and kind of float to
the
surface, or sink to the bottom.
They look dead, even though they might not be dead.
Yeah, and every time I went into a pet value, you know, I would say something to the clerk who would give the same shtick about, oh, that's where they're being kept only temporarily until they go to their forever home. And I really didn't appreciate that they're using like rescue kind of verbiage to describe commercially bred animals.
And a captive animal, essentially.
So I would also contact their head office. They had a contact page, and then I started a petition. It was my first time starting with a petition, and I got up to, I think, about 700 signatures, but I'm happy to report, not long ago I went into a pet value, and they actually have double-sized cups with two little rocks, which I guess is their environmental enrichment, but the fish can actually swim a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's kind of pathetic when animals are kept in such severe confinement that you consider a few inches a win, but you know what? I'll take it.
Yeah, no, it's pretty devastating.
I wish these pet stores didn't sell live animals at all, other than maybe as acting as adoption satellite centers for rescues.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even believe that that's allowed. But I mean, animals are property, so of course it's allowed because it's a business.
Right.
I mean, you can do really anything you want to an animal if you buy it, and nothing is going to happen to you.
Well, I guess it...
I mean, in a certain sense.
Yeah, I mean, we do have animal protection laws, but there's this so-called accepted activities that includes almost every use.
But it's almost, yeah.
And actually, they list about, I think there's about 17 accepted uses of animals, and at the bottom they put any other activity that's considered as accepted. Something really vague, so it's like, oh, gee, we might have forgotten something, so let's just keep that there in case we can think of anything. But they are exempt from our animal protection laws as long as they follow, quote unquote, their own codes of practice. So that's why animals in factory farms, for example, can be kept in a manner that would have you or I going to the hooscow if we did that to our dogs. And that's why these animals can be subjected to all kinds of mutilations without anesthetic, because those are their codes of practice. So, yeah, our laws in Canada are some of the poorest in the world. A lot of people don't realize that. And they need to change.
So inadequate. And, I mean, even if we think about dogs, we know that, hey, they can still keep them in puppy mills. They can still sled dogs, right?
Yeah.
So it's certain animals in certain situations that seem to have protection if they provide like a value to humans, if they're our companions, right?
Well, see, that's the interesting thing, because they always say we should be making science-based decisions and not on emotion. But that's entirely what these laws are based on, is because the only animals that are afforded any semblance of protection are the ones that we are emotionally attached to, even though science tells us those animals experience pain, thirst, fear, hunger, just like all the other animals.
Yeah, there's no difference between a cat, a dog, a pig, a cow, a chicken. Like that's, and I mean, we try not to make too many comparisons as activists, but we talk about it like that because we want people
it's true.
To see. Yeah, and like you said earlier, they're individuals. And just because some are hidden from people, like the pigs, chickens, cows in factory farms, and we live with cats and dogs, doesn't mean that they're any less worthy of being. They're still sentient beings. They have family, right? They have families that they're not allowed to be with. They feel love. They feel fear, pain, just like our companion animals do.
Yeah, and the sad part is they're purposely bred into this world to have no life. You know, they have anything that's of value to them, they never get to experience.
Can you imagine that? Like, even just thinking about being in, like, a pig. So pigs are kept in these, they're called, sow crates, farrowing crates. And they're kept in those, like, in metal bars. And sometimes they're not even, their bodies are so big that they don't even fit properly. They never do anything. They can't even turn around. All they can do is lie down and stand up.
And go insane.
They literally go insane. They chew bars. Can you imagine if that was a human? Like, we don't even, like, I don't think people can really put themselves in the animal's shoes, because it probably is too painful, but it's the reality.
It is the reality. And if people did that just for a moment, just for a few minutes, put yourself, just imagine what it would be like. But sometimes people find it very easy to disregard suffering unless it's theirs or that of, one that they care for. Then it's an issue.
Well, at Veg Fest this weekend, there was a cage.
I actually saw that the first time for the Pause Emotion Walk, but they had a people cage where you could stand in a cage that would be pretty much so you could experience what the sows do. And you were challenged to be in there for 5 minutes. Do you think you could stay in here for 5 minutes? It was funny because I had my dog Shale out at the Pause Emotion Walk, and I went into the cage, and she was like jumping up and very concerned about me being in there, and going, geez, even my dog realizes this is wrong. Why don't people realize it's wrong?
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, should we talk about Veg Fest for a minute?
And, let's talk about Veg Fest. How about Veg Fest?
Yeah,
you know what?
We're all on a high from this amazing vegan festival that was here in Winnipeg this weekend.
Yeah, it was like, we got to be in the vegan world that we're all working towards for a day. You had a day where you're surrounded by wonderful food vendors, and you did not have to ask one person about what was in there. I guess maybe unless you had some sort of an allergy, but you sure didn't have to worry about any, you know, animal products. And there was, like, you know, all kinds of clothing and makeup, and you didn't have to ask what's in there, what's your park aligned with. And it was spectacular. It was just, yeah, a total high being in this, you know, immersed in a sea of like-minded people. And then hearing some wonderful speakers, and I was not at the Festival du Fromageur, the cheese, the vegan cheese contest. Yes, people, all you people out there who just think you can't go vegan because you can't give up cheese, you don't have to give up cheese. You just eat vegan cheese, and it's better for you.
Amazing.
You might even find it better then.
I like it better.
Yeah, okay.
And I used to love cheese, but I found there wasn't as much variety. Now it's like the flavors that people come out with and the variety, and like I feel good eating it. I don't feel sick. And I know most people out there have lactose intolerance and allergies because you're not a baby cow.
Exactly.
Sorry to break it to you.
And you're also weaned. I don't know if you notice, people, but you're weaned. Yeah, and I think that's a...
But I think that's nice that you brought that up. People can go...
Yeah.
They can have their cheese...
And eat it too.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about this, I think it's worth saying, because a lot of people think, well, you know, if you're going to start eating vegan, that you're limiting yourself. And what you'll find is, like, most people eat kind of like the same sort of variation on, you know, meat, potatoes, and veggies all the time. Once you let go of that and you realize all the great vegan foods that are out there, you open yourself up to a whole world of delicious eating. So it's a big culinary, I'd said it, adventure. So yeah, it's not restrictive. It's opening. It opens up.
Oh yeah. I didn't know how to really cook before. Like, I made sandwiches and soup and pizza on pita bread. But then, yeah, going vegan, it kind of forced me to, like, okay. And I remember I got Sarah Kramer, never forget her cookbooks. Punk rock, tattooed, awesome woman from Victoria, owns a tattoo shop. She had put out 3 vegan cookbooks, like late 90s, early 2000s. And wow, they're super simple recipes. And then she helped me learn how to cook.
That's the important thing, right? To make them simple and quick. Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not even just vegan recipes. Other recipes can be very complicated with these, like, weird, obscure ingredients that you don't have. And then it can be deterring to try new things. But, like, when I first went vegan, I just tried to replace what I was basically already eating in a vegan way. Not that that was the healthiest, but, like, you can eat tacos, you can eat nachos, you can eat pizza, you know, you can have stir fries, you can eat sandwiches, you can eat all that stuff. Just make it vegan.
Exactly. Yeah.
It healthy as possible, you know?
Yes. Yeah, so there's been some criticism of things like the Beyond Burger and the Impossible that they're not that healthy. Well, guess what? They're there for the junk food crowd that wants to go to, you know, a late night restaurant and be able to grab something. They're not necessarily meant to be part of your everyday.
No, it's like a once in a while thing. Like, I mean, I like Beyond Burgers, but I don't eat them more than a couple of times a month. I don't know. Like, and if you want to eat them every day, then that's your choice. It's still healthier than eating a beef or like a cow burger. And you're not going to get like that cholesterol.
That's right.
And you're not going to feel like, yeah, it's bad for you eating it.
And it's much more sustainable for the environment too. If you can't tell the difference, then go for it.
Yeah. I was talking to someone at VegFest actually about the Beyond Burgers, and an older gentleman, and he just had said, like, well, what do you think about them? And he said that him and his friends had just tried them the other day and they thought it was phenomenal. And they said, but it looks like meat. It kind of tastes like meat. And I said, I felt the same. Like, when I first cooked them at home, it was like, it smelled like meat. And I was, whoa.
Yeah. What? Did I make a mistake? Pick up the wrong package?
But it's awesome that it can appeal to like a larger crowd of people.
You heard about that, like A&W had an ad on TV getting people to try the plant-based burger, and I think there were some Rough Riders fans or something eating it, and so the Cattlemen's Association demanded and apparently got an apology from the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I'm like, really? Come on.
And yet, the Blue Bombers have, like, what's that burger?
The Walby Burger.
Which, like, is like a heart attack in a burger.
Yeah, like, there's like about 6 animals had to suffer and die to produce that
thing.
Hey,
you know, I like the Blue Bombers, but guys, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
How about a nice plant-based John Rush burger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think you wrote a letter to the editor.
I don't think it got printed.
I know you posted online, and I remember that, and that was awesome. I was like, yes.
See, that's what I like about social media. You know, if the freep doesn't want to, sorry, I don't know if I'm slandering. if the papers don't want to print my stuff, I'll get it out there anyway.
Yeah.
So, exactly. And even if you do print my stuff, I'll get it out there unedited.
Nice. And that's almost better.
Yeah.
So, Debbie, thank you. We have about 2 minutes left where we can chat, and then we're going to play another song. So is there any last words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our listeners about activism, veganism?
I think, you know, there's sometimes a debate whether or not we should use the V word because it apparently carries some baggage. But I think it's our word. We own it. We define it. So to me, veganism is social justice come full circle. Mm-hmm. Because there's no room for things like homophobia, racism, sexism when you believe in respecting all individuals. You can't kill the planet when you're trying to live in a manner that's as harmless and harm-free as possible. Mm-hmm. And all this horrific animal suffering will come to an end in a vegan world. So I say it loud and proud. Mm-hmm. And as a last little note, just to tie in the punk rock, I've got my annual birthday pâté.
Yes.
Booked at XQ's this year, and that will be November the 30th. So it'll be my band, Grandma Llama. I've got the offering, and whether or not they know it's stranded, I'm coming after you next, because they've played every party this year. So, and nice. It's going to be in support of Kismet Creek this year. And I think what I'm going to do too is maybe have a tin for the bin for Rescue Siamese.
Aw,
yeah,
that's amazing. Well, thank you, yeah, for sharing that with us. Go check out, yeah, we didn't really get to talk about your music career as well as a punk rock musician, but
I talked with Crete and Rob about that.
Yeah, there you go. So you talked to
go to
Rob
the archives.
Yeah, exactly. They can listen there, and but yeah, check out Debbie's amazing birthday pâté, November 30th at XQ's. And last year, yeah, she raised funds for Mantua Animal Save, so that was so wonderful. Thank you, Debbie.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, so it was so great to have you on the show.
I can't believe the hour's gone by.
I know. Well, we'll have to do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just got warmed up here.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I feel like we could keep... There's so much to talk about. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And you have so much knowledge, so thank you so much for everything that you do for animals and everything you do for our community.
Oh,
and
you too, Cheryl.
Yeah.
I wish I could clone myself, or I only needed to sleep 4 hours a night.
Right. I know. So now, Debbie picked another song to play, and there's kind of a story behind it. So do you want to let our listeners know what song will be coming on next?
This song was what I used for the intro and extra for my TV show, Animal Rights Forum. It's called Don't Kill the Animals by Lena Lovitch and Nina Hagen.
Yeah.
We were having trouble with names before we started.
Just to make sure we knew how to pronounce them. We were like, I don't know how to pronounce names properly. But
enjoy
yeah.
the song.
So it's called Don't Kill the Animals. And I checked it out, and it was originally released as a single in 1986 today. Or oh. I mean, 1986 originally.
Okay.
And then I think the version we're playing is like kind of a re-released one in 1991. But yeah, I'm super excited. It's a rad song. So,
and it still is as important today as it was back then.
Exactly. So thank you everyone for tuning into Vegan Activist Radio. So my time slot is Mondays, 3 p.m. Next week, Monday, September 30th, I'm super happy to be welcoming animal rights activist from Ontario, Rob McNeil. He'll be calling in. So it'll be a great episode as well. Thank you again, Debbie, and thanks everyone for tuning in.
And go vegan.
Yeah, go vegan.
Just go vegan already.
And get active for animals. You're listening to UMFM 101.5 FM.
To sit through life. succeed. Let the psychic say what the spirit thinks we need. I saw my friends from other planets want to give advice. But the money-orientated business doesn't seem as nice. Come on, let's